Good morning. Today's daf in Erevin, daf kofei. It's a little bit to go on the daf today in order to finish the mesechta, but just a little bit we have to finish up from yesterday's daf. Yesterday we were talking about the Mishnah regarding salting the ramp and cranking the wheel. So salting the ramp, we talked about possible prohibitions of salting the ramp include the fact that the Kohen's feet are not actually touching the ramp. Excuse me. The Kohanim's feet are not touching the ramp, so that obviously would represent a chatzitza. And the other issue is that if I'm salting the ramp, I'm adding a layer to the ramp, so I'm being mosif al abinyan, and I'm adding to the Beit HaMikdash, and the Beit HaMikdash is built to spec, and you can't add anything to the Beit HaMikdash. So the Gemara spoke about that. Then we talked about cranking the wheel. Cranking the wheel, what possible violation of Shabbos is there? So that is that when you crank the wheel, it produces a sound. And the machinery of the wheel itself is not an issue. In other words, a simple machine, like a lever, like a pulley, like a wheel, so that you're allowed to use on Shabbos. An incline, whatever. Okay, I get to show off my basic physics. But that's not the issue. The issue is the fact that the actual turning of the wheel is going to produce a sound, and on Shabbos you're not allowed to manufacture a sound. What the Gemara basically grapples with is what kind of sound is prohibited on Shabbos. Does it have to be any sound whatsoever, or could it be even a melodic sound? The Gemara yesterday started with a story. Guy comes over to the house of Menashe, knocks on the door, and Ula, who was in the house at the time, says, "Oh my gosh, I cannot believe he's knocking on the door on Shabbos. He's producing a sound. He's being mechal Shabbos." Now, the production of a sound, by the way, like that is at worst an Isser Derabanan, but still it's Asur Mederabanan. It's not an Isser Min HaTorah. And again, maybe the Isser producing a sound probably goes back to, if not definitely, goes back to the idea that we're not allowed to play musical instruments on Shabbos for fear that we may come to fix the musical instrument. Okay, so there's a Isser on Shabbos for producing a sound. So that was Ula's response to the guy, and then the Gemara went into a discussion, perhaps, that the idea of producing a sound is only when you're making a melodic sound, when you're making a beat. But just knocking on the door, may not be prohibited on Shabbos. And that this is where we were in the Gemara yesterday, where basically we were having this discussion of whether or not you're allowed to produce any sound, or, I'm sorry, whether you're forbidden from producing any sound, or is it just a melodic sound? Remember yesterday we talked about making the drip for the chola, the person who was sick on Shabbos, and so they made a drip for him. Now, it wasn't an IV drip, it was just a simple drip in order to, well, we don't know. In other words, what exactly was the purpose of it? So the Gemara assumed that maybe the purpose of it was to wake him up, at which point in time, we're not looking for any type of melody, we just simply want noise. And the Gemara noted that you can only do that for someone who's sick, but you can't do it for someone who's healthy. So it sounds like, again, the idea is that you're not allowed to produce any sound, to which the Gemara says, nah, that's not what's going on over there. What's going on over there is that he's trying to fall asleep. So the drip is there to produce a melodic beat so that he could fall asleep. So the Gemara ends up rejecting this idea that any sound whatsoever is going to be prohibited on Shabbos. Eisvei. Brings us up to where we left off yesterday. Kuvdal Amad Aleph, three wide lines down. Eisvei, the Gemara challenges, Hamishamer Peirosav Mibnei HaOfos, Vidalav Mibnei HaChaya, Mishamer Kedarka B'Shabbos. So let's say you want to do a little field protection, a field security on Shabbos. Field over here, I mean literally a field, meaning you have fruit in the field, you have growth in the field, and if without a guard on the field, so who's going to attack it? Well, people may, but more probably animals and birds. So you're there in the field and you're guarding. So do it like you normally would do, meaning you're allowed to be in the field on Shabbos. I know it's not the best Shabbos activity, but you're not violating any malach on Shabbos. So you can guard the field, uvavad. But here are the things that you cannot do. Shalo yisapech, v'lo yitapech, v'lo yirakein. So you can't clap your hands, you can't slap your knees, and you can't be merakein. Merakein literally means dance. In this context, it means stomp your feet, meaning jump up and down. So, kederach she'enos, and b'chol, like you do during the week, meaning you're basically a human scarecrow. So when the birds come, so you're either going to make a large sound with your hands, or you're going to with your feet, or with your legs, whatever the case is, you're usually the human scarecrow. On Shabbos, that's where you have to change the rules. Meaning, you can't clap and bang your hands on Shabbos. So my time up. So again, now that's the statement. That's the braisa. So the Gemara's analysis is a very simple one. Lav de kamolid kala. So again, you're not creating any type of melody. You're just simply producing a sound, and the brisa says you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So once again, it sounds like, again, from this brisa, that any manufacturing of sound is going to be prohibited on Shabbos. Amar Vach Rabbi Yaakov, Gzeres Shem Yitzol Tzror. So Rabbi Rabbi Yaakov says, no, that's not why. In other words, the brisa does say you're not allowed to clap your hands and stamp your feet, but it has nothing to do with the production of sound. That's not the issue. The issue is that once you get excited and energetic about chasing away the birds, and let's say you clap your hands and the birds don't listen to you. So what's your next move? Your next move is you're going to bend down, pick up a stone, throw a stone at the bird. And so what the Chachamim wanted to try to do is cut it off at the pass. Meaning before you get too excited and too energetic, so therefore don't clap your hands and stomp your feet to begin with. Now, yes, I'll just raise a simple difficulty in the Gemara. Meaning what's the Gzera? The Gzera is so don't pick up a stone. And what if I do? What if I do pick up a stone? So I'm violating Muksa on Shabbos. So it sounds like in the Gemara that we just made a Gzera that you're not allowed to do one thing lest you come to the violation of Muksa. Okay, and Muksa itself is only a Din D'Rabbanan. So it sounds like we have over here Gzera L'Gzera. The Gemara doesn't raise this question. I don't know who raises this question, but it seems to be a simple and obvious difficulty in the Gemara. Playing with nuts. Essentially, if you want to just picture it, by the way, it's like basically marbles. It's like playing marbles on Shabbos. So the Braisa says that the ladies can't play with their game of marbles on Shabbos. Again, let's think about this. Let's analyze. Lav deka molid kala v'chol elu dekala aser. So it's because that when you knock them one marble into the other marble, it produces a sound, and any production of sound is aser. Again, the Gemara just keeps going and suggesting that any sound production is going to be prohibited, and lo, and the Gemara ends up rejecting this as well. Now the problem is like this. The game of marbles is played on the floor, and what may end up happening is that you'll notice that as you flick your marble, so it's not going straight. Why isn't it going straight? Because the ground's not level. So what you're going to do now is you're going to get on your knees and you're going to basically smooth out the ground, level the ground. If you're inside the house, that's binyan. If you're outside the house, that may be choresh. Whatever the case is, smoothing out the ground is prohibited. Midaraisa. So therefore, that's why you can't play the game of marbles on the floor. Gilote mahachi hadam rav yehuda nashim masachos betapuchim. Oh, sir. So and the Gemara notes, not only are they not allowed to play marbles together, and again, it's not marbles, it's, you know, banging nuts one into another, where there's a production of sound, but the same game is played, or a similar game is played with apples. Now, the Gemara assumes that when apples collide into one another, there's not really a sound that's coming out of that. And meanwhile, the Braisa says that that's prohibited. So again, hasa mayalude kala ika. Over there, there's no sound production, and yet, it's going to be prohibited. So we're right. Meaning the Gemara says that our analysis is a better analysis. The concern is that you're going to want to end up leveling the ground. Okay, now, what do we learn in our braisa? That if I want to draw out water, so I could use a wheel. But, as we've seen time and again throughout our perek, only in the Beis HaMikdash. Outside the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to do it. Why not? Why can't I crank a wheel outside the Beis HaMikdash? My time, Lamisham Dolu Kalava Aster. And again, for, I don't know, the sixth time, seventh time, the Gemara is going to suggest that maybe it's because you're producing a sound, and that's why it's prohibited. The Gemara immediately rejects Lo Gzereshama Yamalei Legina So Ulechurva So. No, because look, once you're using a wheel, that makes drawing water really easy. In other words, you're using a machine. So now that you have ease of getting of water, so I can get one bucket with a machine, I can just crank out as many buckets as I want. I have so much access to water, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to water my field. So in other words, the Chachamim were concerned that once you have such ease to water, so the next step is that, in other words, I have enough to drink, now I got my field, which is drying out over there in the hot sun, let me go water the field as well. So that's why the Chachamim prohibited the use of a wheel on Shabbos, nothing to do with the production of the sound, but rather because we know the Chachamim didn't want us to get such easy access to water. Okay, and now a little bit of controversy. Amemar permitted the use of a wheel in the town of Mechuzah. Now, the town of Mechuzah, obviously, outside the Beis HaMikdash. So Amar my time goes Rabbanan. So here it gets interesting because what he's going to do is the following. He's going to think. Nothing wrong with thinking. So thinking is a good thing. But in other words, he's going to reason and rationale. And his argument is, look, I know why the rabbis prohibited the turning of the wheel on Shabbos. I know why. And over here, the reason doesn't apply. And so therefore, because the reason doesn't apply, so therefore here it's mutter. Okay. Generally speaking, we have this concept of what's called lo plug, meaning once the rabbis made a decree, that's it. In other words, you have to abide by the decree, even if the reason may not be it may not be reasonable, but still, in other words, we generally do follow it. So it is certainly interesting over here where a Amemar seems to basically rationale and reason, look, I know the reason, it doesn't apply over here, therefore it's okay. So the reason why you're not allowed to use a wheel in order to draw the water up is because it makes the ease of water too easy, easy access to water, and then you're going to end up watering your garden. But we're in the town of Mechuzah, and it's not a town. Mechuzah was a city. So who's watering the garden? Who's got a garden to begin with? So Velochurva Ika came into Kachaza. But then what do people do in the city of Mechuzah? Okay, they weren't watering their field. But with that easy access to water, you know what they were doing? They were soaking their linen. Right? Soaking flax, one of the necessary steps in terms of the preparation of the flax. You got to soak in a lot of water. So once they were given such easy access to water, so they started soaking their flax. Probably the malacha of Libun, of laundering, and therefore he had to prohibit it as well over there. Ume be'er hakir. Okay, you remember the Mishnah? The Mishnah says that the Bor HaGol and the Bor HaGadol, they cranked with the wheel, says the Mishnah. We just talked about that. And then the be'er hakir, they drew from on Yantav. The Gemara asks a very simple question, my be'er hakir. So what does that mean? Meaning, are we speaking about a geographic location? Is the be'er hakir an adjective describing this type of be'er? I'm a shmuel bor shehikru alav dvarim. It was a pit shehikru. Now the hein ches in Hebrew always can flip. So they're both produced from the back of the throat. So they can always flip. So the word hikru can also come from the word chikru, which means that bor shehikru alav dvarim. So they investigated the matter. They debated the matter. Vihiti ruha, and they permitted it. Meisvei the Gemara challenges lo kol abaros hakiras hituru ela zubavad. The Gemara notes, I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that pshat is right, because the Braisa says, not every be'er hakir, only this be'er hakir. That's strange considering the fact that the way Shmuel described it, it was the word hakir come specifically because it was this pit, that this well that we argued about. Right, so if there was a chakira, if there was an investigation, so why then are we only talking about this pit? Meaning, why would the Braisa say, but only this pit, isn't the whole definition that we investigated this pit and we allowed it? So Alam Rav Nachman, Bar Yitzchak, Be'er Mayim Chayim. So Be'er Hikru, Hakir, has nothing to do with an investigation and a debate and a dialogue, whether we can use it, whether we cannot use it, but rather, what is it concerning? It's just simply a description of spring water. Natural spring water. Meaning, as we've discussed already time and again, in the second parak of Erevin, we made a big point about this, that there are two types of water sources. There's a pit, and then there's a well. A well meaning with spring water. So the difference between them is that a pit is just a pit. Water goes in, water either evaporates or we're going to use it. Either way, it has a limit. The spring water, however, which is a natural spring source, so it keeps regenerating, it keeps resupplying. Shenamar, and how do I know this? Because the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, Ke'akir Bayir Mei Meha. Okay, the pasuk in Yirmiyahu describes, a natural spring, Be'er Mayim Chayim, using this word, ki'akir. So that's what it means over here. Gufa lokal abarz akaros hitiru ela zubavad. It was only this pit that they permitted. Ukeshala ben Agola chanu ala V'nivim shebenei mitu lahen. So it was this pit where, when they came up from the diaspora to presumably we're talking about coming up to build the Beit Sheni, so therefore the prophets were there for the last generation, meaning that generation going up from Persia and going back to Eretz Yisrael to build the Beis HaMikdash. That was the last generation of Nevi'im. So they allowed the use of the bear. V'lo Nevi'im shebeneihem. And then the Gemara makes one small correction. It wasn't really the prophets. Ala minag of asam biyadeihem. But rather, it was just simply a minag. It was a practice that they used the pit. Okay? Adkan. Okay, last Mishnah. Last topic of discussion in the Masechta. Sheretz shenimsa b'mikdash. Kohen motzio behem meno. All right, we find a sheretz in the Beis HaMikdash. This is not as exciting as finding a dead person in the Beis HaMikdash, but halachically challenging. You find a sheretz in the Beis HaMikdash, we would like to remove the sheretz out of the Beis HaMikdash as soon as possible. We're going to talk in just a moment about what exactly is the prohibition of bringing the sheretz into the Beis HaMikdash, but before we get to that point in time, just we want to talk now about tumah removal from the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? This is not pest removal, the sheretz is dead. This is tumah removal outside the Beis HaMikdash. We know that anyone who is tameh cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the sheretz is not a person. The sheretz obviously is a lizard, it's an insect, it's a frog, whatever. It's one of the eight shratzim that are mentioned in Parsha Shmini, where the Torah says that the carcass of these shratzim are going to be an avatumah, source of tumah. So what we want to do is we want to get the sheretz out of there as soon as possible. A kohen who makes any type of physical contact with the sheretz is going to become tameh, and we don't want that. So basically, we want the sheretz there as soon as possible. Also, another consideration is that not only do we want the sheretz there as soon as possible, but in the removal, if possible, can we minimize the amount of tumah, the increased tumah? So in other words, can we not proliferate tumah while removing the sheretz outside the Beis HaMikdash? And another thing, one more consideration. We're probably talking about on Shabbos, right? Presumably. Meaning, we're in the 10th parak of Erevin. We've been talking about Shabbos topics throughout the parak. So presumably, we're talking about on Shabbos as well. And if we're talking about on Shabbos, well, now what? Muksa. Meaning, the sheretz is going to be muksa. So there's a number of considerations to be had over here in terms of the removal of the sheretz. So, first of all, how do I get it out of there? Okay, so that's question number one. So there are going to be two opinions in our Mishnah. Kohen motzia behem meino, shalalasha sasatuma div Rav Yochanan ben Brocha. So the first opinion in the Mishnah is that of Rav Yochanan ben Brocha, and that is, Kohen, take off your belt, put the sheretz in the belt, and take it out with your belt. Now, in doing so, you're going to gain in one area, but lose in another area. What's the gain? Speed. Meaning every Kohen's wearing a belt. So in other words, it's just a quick take off the belt, pick up the sheretz with the belt, and take it out. So that's great. So in terms of speed, that was fantastic. However, the belt's now going to become tummy. The Kohen's not going to become tummy. Everyone understand that? Let me be clear about that. The Kohen's not going to become tummy because, remember, the sheretz is an avatumah. The sheretz is being held in the belt. So what does that make the belt? The belt's a rishon l'tumah. A person cannot become tummy by touching a rishon. In other words, the person is not touching the sheretz himself. The kohen is only touching the belt. So therefore, the person is not going to become tameh, but the belt will. So in other words, you made one item tameh in the removal of the sheretz, but you got speed. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'tzav shel eshel al rabbis is a tumah. Now Rabbi Yehuda says, get out the wooden tongs. The wooden tongs, right? Why wooden tongs? Because we know as a general rule when it comes to kalim, pshute kli eitz. Simple wooden item, simple meaning. There's no toch, there's no inside to them. So a pair of wooden tongs would be perfect. It's basically chopsticks, if you will. So if you pick up the sheretz with a pair of chopsticks, so now you did great, because now there was no proliferation of tumah whatsoever. You don't become tameh, but not even the wooden tzevis, not even the wooden tongs become tameh, because pshute kli eitz, simple wooden utensils are not mekabel tumah, are not susceptible to tumah. However, that's the plus. What's the minus? It may take you a moment to find the wooden tongs. Meaning, the wooden tongs are not on you right now, so you're going to have to look around for the wooden tongs. And so it's going to take more time. So, obviously, in the cost analysis over here, Rav Yochanan ben Broka favors speed. Rabbi Yehuda favors no proliferation of tumah. Okay, so, you know, everything's triage. It's, you know, it's a lot like life. And it's just a question of what's the priority. Good. We'll come back. We'll discuss that a little bit more as we get into the Gemara. Next point of the Mishnah. Mehechan motzin oso min ahechal. Now, where exactly do I have to remove it out of? Meaning, the simplest pshat, which is we're going to see in just a moment, is Rabbi Kiva, is anywhere in the Azara. What difference does it make where I find it in the courtyard? In the meantime, however, as we're going to see in our Mishnah, it's machlokas tanayim, where exactly it needs to be removed from. So, mehechal motzin oso min ahechal min ha'ulam, I'm sorry, min ahechal, So, according to Rav Shimon ben Nanas, you must remove it anywhere in the Azara west of the Mizbeach. Okay, if you want to take a look at your picture over there of the Azara, the temple courtyard, okay, remember in your mind you got to flip it upside down, okay, because right now north is south and south is north, okay, but flip it upside down. So, and then go. It's really so silly. And then you're looking at the Mizbeach. So anything west of the Mizbeach, from our vantage point right now, as we're looking at it upside down, that means to the right of the Mizbeach. Okay, that's not normally west. But anything to the right of the Mizbeach, says Rav Shimon ben Nanas, that's where, if the sheretz were found, it must be removed. Anything to the east of the Mizbeach, from our vantage point, that's to the left of the Mizbeach, so that's going to, that doesn't need to be removed. Okay? It's a strange demarcating point in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Azara. What exactly is that line that we're drawing, that east of the Mizbeach, west of the Mizbeach? Not 100% clear in terms of why that becomes such a significant point in the Azara, but that's the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Nanas. Rabbi Kiva Omer, kol makom shechayev mazdono karis v'al shigas chatas, misham motzin oso. And Rabbi Kiva takes the position, which, as I pointed out, I think is a little more intuitive. Wherever in the Azara, it doesn't matter. Anywhere where the sheretz is found in the Azara, the dead sheretz is found in the Azara, that's where you need to remove it. Again, the method of removal, machlokas tanayim. Where in the Azara do you need to remove it? Another machlokas tanayim. V'shar kol ha-makamos kofen la psachter. Now, anywhere else you may find it in the Beis HaMikdash area, meaning in the Har HaBayis, maybe even in Yerushalayim, that I'm not sure about. But anywhere else you find it in the courtyard area, so you just simply take a bowl and put a bowl over it and don't move it. What's going to happen? Meaning, as I pointed out, we're talking about on Shabbos. So aside from all the other issues of speed and no proliferation of tumah, there's also another very simple issue, which is muktzah. So, if I don't need to take it out, in other words, we're not in the Azar right now, let's say we're in Har HaBayis, so if I don't need to take it out, so just take a bowl, flip it over, and then after Shabbos, we'll come back and we'll remove it after Shabbos.
Is it indirectly?
Yeah. Yeah, in other words, Totel Menatzad is indirect movement, correct. That would be okay. And then how does the Mishnah end off? This is the last line of Mishnah of the Masechta. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Makam Sheitir Lacha Chamim Mishacha, Nasnu Lacha, Shelo Itir Lacha Ela Mishim Shvus. Okay, almost a cryptic line. It's almost like code, this last line of Mishnah. I'll translate literally, but I won't do anything more than that. Tomorrow during Shal Shudas, I'll explain what this line means. It's not me that's going to explain it. It's going to be the Gemara that's going to explain it. But Rabbi Shimon says that the place where the Chachamim allowed you, they allowed you something which is already really allowed. They only permitted it b'makom shvus because it's a rabbinic prohibition. Okay, it is an absolute cryptic line. He doesn't seem to be responding to anything mentioned in the Mishnah itself. The Gemara tomorrow is going to ask the obvious question, what is Rabbi Shimon talking about? So we'll put that in reserve for tomorrow, and tomorrow we'll queue it up. We'll go over the Gemara inside. In the meantime, however, we have Gemara that we're going to go through. Amar Rav Tevi Bar Kisna, Amar Shmuel. The Gemara opens up the discussion over here with a big chiddush in the name of Shmuel. I say big chiddush, it really is. Hamachnis Tamei Sheretz HaMikdash Chayev. Sheretz Atzma Pater. Now, we're not allowed to be Metamei the Beis HaMikdash, right? We just read about it earlier in Sefer Bamidbar. Shelo Yitamu Es Machaneihem. right? We're not allowed to introduce any Tumah into the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that's pretty straightforward. So any object that's Tameh, either because it's a source of Tumah or because it's a derivative of Tumah, is prohibited from being brought into the Beis HaMikdash. So far, so good. That's very straightforward. Here's where Shmuel opens up the discussion. If I have, let's say, an item that comes into contact with a sheretz, so that item now is a vlada tumah. Fine. I can't bring that into the Beis HaMikdash. Good. If I bring the sheretz itself into the temple,
it's not tumah.
Dead sheretz.
Oh, dead.
If I bring the sheretz itself into the Beis HaMikdash, I will be exempt, putter. Now, the word putter means that it's not a biblical prohibition. I think it's safe to surmise that it's rabbinically prohibited to do so. In other words, we're not condoning the act, but if you do that, you're not going to be in violation of being metame machaneim. Now, it is so counterintuitive, for the obvious reason, meaning a derivative of the sheretz being brought into the azara, you're going to be chayiv. Meaning that's a violation of being metame the Beis HaMikdash. The source of the tumah, meaning the sheretz itself being brought in, you're fine. Okay. Now, obviously, that requires an explanation. That in of itself logically does not make any sense. My taima. So here he bases it on a pasuk. So what we'll say now is gzeiros hakasuf, meaning that in terms of logic and rationale, it really doesn't make sense that the source, the derivative, you're going to be chayev. The source being brought in of tumah, you're going to be pater. That doesn't make any sense. We're going to have to say it's gzeiros hakasuf. Amakra, the pasuk says mizachar ve'anekeva tisha lachum, that you must send out of the Beis HaMikdash male, female, meaning anyone who's Tameh needs to be sent out of the Beis HaMikdash. And what we're going to derive from the pasuk is the following. Mishesh latar b'mikvah, meaning what sorts of Tumah needs to be removed from the Beis HaMikdash? Something which at least can be converted from Tumah to Tahara. Meaning, let's start off with a simple example. You and me. You and I. However the grammar works. In other words, we can become Tameh, we also can become Tahor. Simple toveling in the mikvah, or if it's Tumas Meis, Paraduma, toveling in the mikvah. So in other words, we can change our status from Tumah to Tahara. And most things can. Most. Food can't. Okay, but most, water can. Kalim can. Most Kalim. Kli Cheres can't. We'll talk about Kli Cheres in just a moment. What about a sheretz? Sheretz can't. Once the sheretz dies, it's tameh and remains tameh.
What if it dries out?
Yeah, so if it disintegrates, it's a good point, and you're right. If it disintegrates, it's no longer tameh, but it's no longer a sheretz. Right. Right. So in other words, it loses its tumah status when it loses its status altogether. Okay. But in other words, you and I, right, after we tell them the mikvah, we're still here, but our status can change. So what Shmuel's darshing from the pasuk is, and it sounds like an Amar is darshing a pasuk, which is a rarity. It doesn't happen that often. We do find it. What Shmuel's darshing from the pasuk is that anything which right now we're going to say is a sheretz that is not that is tameh and cannot be converted to being tahor is not a violation of Tumas Mikdash. Again, it's not intuitive. It's not logical, but that's the drasha. The Gemara suggests perhaps this is going to be a proof for Shmuel. Rav Yossi Aglili says, let's say you were to take a Kli Cheres and bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and let's say the Kli Cheres becomes Tameh. Right? How does the Kli Cheres become Tameh? Well, you know, it becomes Tameh through its interior. Mi Gavo. From inside. In other words, the sheretz goes inside the Kli Cheres. The Kli Cheres now becomes Tameh. And if through its airspace, and Rav Yosef Lili says that you will not be liable. It will not be a violation of Tumas Mikdash by bringing in the Kli Cheres into the Beis HaMikdash. Now, my time, huh? La Mishum Delay Slay Tahara. Now, let's, presumably, we're going to use the same argument. You can't be Matarit. There's no tefillah by Kli Cheres. What's the solution to Kli Cheres?
Break
it. The Torah says Yishaber. You have to break it. But there's no Tahara. So the Gemara says, okay, so it sounds like now we have an excellent support for the thesis of Shmuel. So the Gemara says, "Lo, Misha Nasa Avatuma Yasek Licheres She'enu Nasa Avatuma." So the Gemara says, "No, really, could give a different argument, and that's the following: the only thing that you're going to be in violation of for bringing into the Beis Hamikdash are items which at least potentially can become an Avatuma. Now, we people can become an Avatuma. It's really easy. Azava Zava Nida Yoledes." Coming into contact with the Tumas Mace, so we can become an Avatuma. Kalim, for the most part, can become an Avatuma. Now, if a Kli touches a Sheretz, the Kli is not an Avatuma, it's only a Rishon, but if a Kli, let's say, were sat on, Rashi gives this example, right? If a Kli was a chair, and it was sat on by a person, by a Zavar, Zava, or Nida Yoledes, so the chair becomes an Avatuma, right? That's what's called Tumas Medras. So at least Kalim, for the most part, can become an Avatuma. Kli Cheres, no. Kli Cheres has no way of becoming an Avatuma. Rashi goes through it. It's a long Rashi. I'm not going to go through it right now. But Rashi goes through it. There's no Tumas Medrash by Kli Cheres. Fine. So in other words, what the Gemara is arguing now is that you don't have to go with Shmuel's thesis. You can give a different explanation. The reason why Kli Cheres is not a violation of Tumas Mikdash is because Kli Cheres can never become an Avatuma, and you're only going to be Chayiv if you bring something which at least potentially can become an Avatuma. Lema Ketanai, the Gemara now is suggesting that the statement of Shmuel is really subject to a Machlokes Tanayim. Sher Shenimsa B'Mikdash Koyim Motziya B'Hemeno Shalalasho Sasatuma Divrei Rav Yochanan Ben Brocha. We're going to review the two positions of the Mishnah. Method. How do I get the Tuma out of the Azara? So Rav Yochanan Ben Brocha says, Kohen should use his belt. Rav Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Tzeva Shal Eitz, Motziya Shal El Rabba says the Tuma. And Rav Yehuda says, no, don't use a belt, get a pair of wooden tongs, and pluck it out over there with the wooden tongs so that you don't proliferate the Tuma. Good. Myla Bahaka Miflagi. So now the Gemara, in suggesting how do I understand the machlokas between the two, oh, I think I know how I understand it. Meaning, if you want speed, oh, I think I know why you want speed, because bringing it in was already a violation, meaning contrary to what Shmuel said, and so therefore, since bringing it in already was a violation, so therefore you want to get it out of there as soon as possible. And the one who says, no, I don't care about speed, let's not proliferate, So he's in agreement with Shmuel that the introduction of the sheretz into the Beis HaMikdash in of itself is not a prohibition. It's not a Torah prohibition. So therefore, in terms of getting it out, we don't need speed and alacrity. Just simply, let's not proliferate the Tuma. So let's look for a pair of wooden tongs. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is that this position of Shmuel may in fact be the machlokis between Rav Yochanan Ben Brocha and Rav Yehuda of our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, no, tekulei alma chayev. It could be that they both disagree with Shmuel. And Shmuel thesis. And over here, what's the analysis of the machlokas in the Mishnah? It's really simple. The analysis is as I explained already once in the Mishnah, it's a question of where we're going to prioritize. Do we want to get the Tuma out of there as soon as possible? Cohen, use your belt. Or do we not want to proliferate the Tuma? Don't use your belt, get a pair of wooden tongs. It's just really, that's the issue in the Mishnah between the two, and it has nothing to do with the statement of the thesis of Shmuel. Okay, Ella Kahani Tanai. So the Gemara suggests, okay, yeah, fine. How about this? Let's go over the next machlokas in our Mishnah, which is the Name Echamotzino. So, where do you need to remove it from? So, and we had a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Akiva and Rav Shimon Menanis. To quickly review, Rav Shimon Menanis says, anywhere west of the Mizbeach needs to be removed. According to Rabbi Akiva, anywhere in the Azara, the Sheretz is found, it needs to be removed. So once again, now what the Gemara is going to suggest is that Machlokas really is all hinging on the thesis of Shmuel. So the Gemara suggests, my la b'hakam ifligi d'man d'amra b'azara lo kasavra maknes Sheretz l'mikdash pater. So the position of Shimon Menanis perhaps is going like Shmuel, or I should say rather, more historically accurate, Shmuel is following the position of Shimon Menanis, which means that introducing it into the Azara to begin with was not an issue, and therefore, if I find it anywhere east of the Mizbeach, it's okay. leave it there. We'll take care of it after Shabbos. And Rabbi Akiva, who says, I don't care where you find it in the Azara, you must remove it. So perhaps he disagrees with Shmuel. And even introducing the Sheretz into the Azara to begin with was prohibited. So the Gemara is suggesting now, once again, that this thesis of Shmuel is really what's behind the machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rav Shimon ben Anas. Amar of Yochanan, so as Rashi points out, what essentially the Gemara now is suggesting is no. In other words, they're not arguing about Shmuel's position. It could be they both disagree with Shmuel again, that when you introduce a Sheretz into the Beis HaMikdash, you will be Chayev. What are they arguing about? They're arguing about how to understand a pasuk in Tanakh. Amar of Yochanan, Shnei Mikra, Echa Darshu, Vayavo, Akonim, Lepenima, Beis Hashem l'taher, v'yotzis kol atum asher matzu behechal Hashem l'chatar Beis Hashem, v'yikablu alivim l'otzil l'nachal kidron chutza. Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim is describing the following. We are historically at the Malchus of Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu, an interesting king of Yehuda. Father was a Rasha, son was a Rasha. Right, sandwiched between two Rishayim. In fact, one of the reasons why he didn't want to have children is because he knew prophetically his child was going to end up being a Rasha. I know philosophically that's challenging, but that's not for me to discuss right now. But so he stopped. He didn't want to have children, and the Navi comes over to him and says, "Okay, good. You don't want to have children. This is the end of your life." He davened. He got an extension of 15 more years of living. Okay, but that's not what we're discussing right now. What we're discussing right now is he had a big cleanup job to do, because his father was also a tremendous Rasha. His father was Achaz, also a tremendous Rasha, and introduced a lot of Avodah Zarah into the Beis HaMikdash. So one of the things Chizkiyahu had to do was clean up the Azara. And that he had to remove all the Avodah Zarah that was introduced by his father. Now the Avodah Zarah also is Tameh. And so now what we're talking about here in this pasuk in Divrei Hayamim is the removal of Tumas Avodah Zarah from the Beis HaMikdash, left by Achaz, removed by Chizkiyahu. And the Navi gives a very interesting description where the Kohanim went inside, they did the interior work, and then they passed it on to the Levium, and then the Levium took it out from there to Nachal Kidron. Okay. That's how the Pasuk in Navi is describing it. And now what the Gemara is noting is that the machlokus between Rav Shimon ben Anas and Rabbi Akiva is really hinging on how to properly understand this pasuk. Mar savami dishani me'azara b'levim tuma ba'azara leka. So, in other words, what happened is that it was passed from the Kohanim to the Levium. So that gives you an indication that it's not a problem to have tuma in the Azara, and therefore it was handed off from the Kohanim to the Levium. And Rabbi Kiva's position is no. Truth be told is that there shouldn't be Tuma anywhere in the Azara. What's with the handoff? Well, the handoff is because really we don't want Kohanim to become Tame. Levium, we're okay with Levium becoming Tame. Huh? Yeah, I hear you, and I understand you, and I don't fully understand this myself, but for whatever reason, in other words, as minimum as amount of handling, I mean, once they handle it, yeah, I mean, you're right, once they're handling it, they're tummy, and I grant you that. But in other words, we want to try to minimize the amount of time the Kohanim have to handle the tumma, and then we hand it off to the Levium. And it has nothing to do with geographic location in the Beis HaMikdash itself, in the Azar itself. It just simply, we want the Kohanim to handle as little as we can. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara here quotes the Tosefta, how we moved on to this portion of the discussion, since we just covered the idea that really the Levium aren't allowed to be in the interior of the Beis HaMikdash, even if it's for tumah removal. So now we're going to move on to the discussion of the following Tosefta. Hakol nechnasim be'echa livnos l'sakin l'hotzias ha'tumah. Umitzvah bekohanim. Okay, really, truth be told. Okay, let's start off with a very simple point. When you go into the Beis HaMikdash, it can't be purposeless. There has to be purpose when you're going into the Beis HaMikdash. Fine. So the truth be told is that as long as there's a reason why I'm going to the Beis HaMikdash, as long as there's a solid justification so I could do so. The Tosefta says, HaKol Nichnasim BeHechal, Livnos Ulasakein Ulahotzei Satama. Look, if there needs to be any type of work done in the Beis HaMikdash, meaning Bedek HaBayis, temple upkeep, or the to fix something, or to remove tuma, truth be told, anyone can go in. Mitzvah b'kohanim, however, principally, it should be the Kohen. Meaning the Kohen has the most access to the Beis HaMikdash, so principally it should be the Kohen. Now if there's no Kohen around, so then the Levi. Now if there's no Levi, so then have a Yisrael. Now all this should be done by those who are Tahor. Tahorin into Mamlo. Amar Avuna Rav Kahana Misayeya Kahani. Did ni Rav Kahana? The pasuk says he shouldn't go beyond the paroches. So yachol lo yukohanim bale momim nechnasim beina ulam lemizbech lasos rikui pachim. So I might have thought, let's say you're a kohen bamum, you're a blemished kohen, which means you can't do the avoda. So maybe I might have thought that you cannot go beyond the ulam, beyond the mizbech, in order to make the gold plating. Remember how the interior of the actual Beis HaMikdash was gold plated? So Tamalama ach chalak mitzvah b'tmimim. So really, ach tells us that there is a line that we're going to draw. Which where's the line? Really, first and foremost, the Kohanim who are tamim, who are unblemished, who are able to do the avoda, they should be the first line of attack. They should be the ones going on. Einsham tamimim nichnasim balei momim. Now, if they're not available, so then get the balmum. Mitzvah v'taharim, ein sham taharim, nechnasim tamayim. Now, it should be a tahor, and if they have no one who's tahor, so then have tamayim come in. Idi v'idi kohanim in Yisraelim lo. Okay, and again, what's the point? The point being is that really the people who should have the access into the Beis HaMikdash are kohanim, meaning best is tamimim, second best is balei momim, third best is tamayim, but it should always be kohanim. Ibailu. Tami Abama Mezam Em Nichna. So okay, the Gemara now wants to try to give us a pecking order. So now we know 1, 2, and 3. 1 is a Tamim, 2 is a Balmum, and 3 is a Tame. How about this? How about my choice is I don't have a Tamim. I have either a Kohen Balmum or a Kohen Tame. Which one of them gets priority? Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashiyam or Rav Tami Nichnas Da Ishtari Ba'avodat Sibor. Tommy gets priority. Why? Because he can do the avoda. Not always, not regularly, but if the majority of the Jewish people are Tamei, so then the Tamei Kohen can do the avoda. So at least potentially he could do the avoda.
His status is temporary rather than
okay. That's that could be another argument, and I accept that. I hear that. Rabbi Lazar Omer Balmum Nichnas to Ha'ishtane Bachilas Kachim, and Rav Elazar argues, no. Let's have the Balmum come in. Because although the Balmum can't do the Avoda, but at least he can eat Karbanos. Right? The Tameh can eat Karbanos in his current state. So, okay. So the Gemara basically says, I can hear both sides of the argument. Okay. Good. Just quick review. And then tomorrow we leave ourselves off with the cryptic lines of Rabbi Shimon. But a quick review. So today we finished up the production of sound. What was our conclusion? Random manufacturing of sound on Shabbos is fine. It's when you're trying to create a melodic beat that becomes prohibited. Clapping on Shabbos, okay. I started the discussion. So now you can understand that clapping on Shabbos may present a problem. You'll speak to your local Orthodox rabbi. It all comes from this Gemara right over here. Then we turned our discussion today to a sheretz found in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. What do I do? So the answer is basically pick it up and take it out. The method of how to take it out, that's the Bein Har Mishnah. Okay, if you would like to know, the Rambam says the wooden tongs is his preferred method of taking it out. In other words, he prefers not proliferating tuma. And then from where in the Azar do I need to take it out? So that's also another machlokus in the Mishnah. And as you would imagine, the Rambam sides with the position of Rabbi Akiva. Anywhere in the Azara, the sheretz needs to be taken out of the Azara. And we had a major thesis by Shmuel today is that if I find sheretz in the, if I introduce the sheretz into the Beit HaMikdash, into the temple courtyard area, you're not going to be chayev, because the sheretz is no possibility of becoming tahor. The Gemara does not seem to support Shmuel's thesis. It's really a big chiddush. And then we ended up today discussing who should go into the Beis HaMikdash in order to remove the tumah, and for that matter, who should go in to do any work in the Beis HaMikdash whatsoever. We said the first line really is the Kohan. Fundamentally, it could be anybody, but really the first wave of people should be the Kohanim, and then we just gave a pecking order of Tamim, Bamum, and Tamei in terms of who gets to go in first, second, and third. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Again, tomorrow's schedule is very straightforward. Before Mincha, an hour before Mincha, we're going to learn Pesachim. I think we're going to learn in the social hall. I think so. And then during Shal Shudas, we'll be Mesayim, Mesachta Erevin. Okay. I guess a preliminary Mazel Tov to all of us. That was some accomplishment.